It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Here's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along on this Saturday. And Captain Mike is back from assignment. Good to see you.
Yeah, man, glad to be back. Beautiful weekend.
Yeah, before that, though, and we're going to get into some talk, of course, looking forward to Friday coming up and snapper season. But before we do that, you were you took your turkey hunting out of state to New York State.
I would have never dreamed I'd ever went to New York to turkey hunt. Now, I'm telling you, I just never would have. But anyway, strange stem of events happened. We went on a cruise one time to Alaska, and we met some people that lived in upstate New York, and they invited us to come up and turkey hunt.
Let me point out that my friend Mike Ward, who is like, could meet anybody anywhere, you're on a cruise in Alaska and meet somebody from New York State that's got turkeys.
Actually, my buddy Kenny Bledy met them.
Okay, so he was your point man.
Meeting them and all that. But anyway, they said they had tons of turkeys up there. There are turkeys everywhere. They just, in every field, there's, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100. So he invited us to come up. You know, I said, well, sounds like we better kill one. And we did. It was a great hunt. I mean, a beautiful country upstate New York is nothing like what you think. Everybody thinks you're going to be somewhere around a city or something. Right. No. Upstate New York is absolutely beautiful.
Where were y'all?
We were real close to Watertown in a little town called Philadelphia.
Okay. Because it's funny, you said, hey, I'm going to go turkey hunting in New York, so I've got a child. My daughter goes to school about two hours north of the city, right along the Hudson River.
Yeah.
And I want to turkey hunt up there because, you know, that area, there's some towns up there, but there's a lot of country. And I just don't think there's some hunters, but it's not like here.
No,
and there's
turkey, I never heard a shot.
There's turkeys walking around. I go up to our school up there, and there's turkeys on campus, let alone around there, that, like, they have no fear of a part. I said, I need to get up here. But so I was jealous when you got to go up there. So farm country you were in, or what
it's
kind of country?
It's all farm country, beautiful woods. I mean, the, you know, big hard woods, wide open. I'm talking about, you can see 300 yards out through some of the places. Just absolutely beautiful, rolling hills. And now, they weren't as easy to hunt and kill as I thought they were going
because
to be.
Because of wide open or because they didn't come to calls?
No,
or
they just didn't. They didn't come to calls as easy as I thought they would.
Okay.
You know, they did come, but they didn't come as easy as I thought they
would.
It
wasn't like Rio's in Texas or something like that.
No. I don't know. They're a little educated. I don't know. But you see them in every field. I mean, you go from one field to another field. I mean,
so the population, too. I mean, what he told you back on the cruise, did that prove out that there were turkeys?
When we got there 1st of May, he said the turkeys were not in the fields near as much as they were a month before we got there.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, he's just telling us that. And then his mother and daddy came down to eat lunch with us. And that's what his mother and daddy said. Boy, you should have been here 3 or 4 weeks ago. Every field had 30, 40, 50, 100 in them.
That's before they split
up. So they're still there.
But 100. I mean, that's like the old days in Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people you can drive here to Montgomery, to Tuscaloosa, to Selma, to back to Mobile, and you probably won't see a turkey in a field.
Right.
And here, I mean, you don't go a quarter of a mile and, you know, you're going to see turkeys in a field.
Okay, so you
but
said
there'd
they
be
were
one gobbler and two hens, or there might be two or three gobblers and two or three hens, we saw one time maybe 25 or 30 in a field.
So, okay, hunting them, you said, a little harder than you thought. I mean, you had success.
Well,
I hate to, you know, spoil the story. Yes.
Yeah, they're turkeys, you know, so they're not easy turkeys to kill. There are some places that are, I guess, you can go and you can kill them.
Texas.
Yep, a couple times, they just come running to you. These weren't that way. I mean, I had one.
Because northeastern turkeys, I mean, I know that area. I know they're eastern, so I'm saying in the northeast. I've hunted them some south of you in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And there's a long hunting heritage in Pennsylvania. They've been hunting them. They're not pushovers.
No.
They're like Alabama turkeys.
You know? These are a little easier than Alabama.
In New York, you see, Pennsylvania's more like Alabama turkeys just because all my kin's been hunting them forever.
But. But, you know, they were with hens, okay. most of them. And I saw one that was 100-something yards from me in those wide-open, beautiful woods, you know, with hens. And he was topping hens, but he wasn't paying any attention to me. He wouldn't even look my direction.
So, I mean, there at May 1st there, beginning of May in New York, is that like March here? Or like, what can you...
I think that would probably around the 1st of April or something.
Okay,
maybe.
So they're acting about a month. They're about a month later than our turkeys in their actions. Okay.
I mean, it's still cold up there. We had a couple nights. It was in the 30s.
Yeah.
You know, the 36.
You know you're not far from Canada there.
Oh, we were at the, we're 20 minutes from the border.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so we were right there in Canada. And actually, I was looking at in Canada, you could hunt in Canada, too. We could have got tags.
Which, by the way, should have gone. Shout out to our buddy Adrian Johnson, and he killed an Ontario bird this year.
Yeah.
Because the U.S. is not, and Mexico is not good enough for him. Because he's already, you know, he's in the Yucatan. He was killed and oscillated. Now he was in Ontario. But
yeah.
You know, if you're listening, Adrian, nice to be you.
If I go back, I mean, I might go for a week or 10 days and try to do the
that
New York,
go across it, yeah.
Maine, and go across the border.
Okay, if you need a driver, let me know.
Yeah, well, me and you going to go.
Okay.
We're going to go to Yucatan, then we're going to go to upstate New York.
Which, that we got to plan some of that. We got to plan the Yucatan trip for sure. But that's
that
great.
That would be a trip.
But y'all, you went up there. Is it over-the-counter tags? You just go to the, down the store?
Over-the-counter. We went to Walmart, got a license, got a tag. There was no issue at all. You know, going to, like, a lot of places, like Kansas, you got to draw for a tag in Kansas. And I did get one this year.
And you got one.
And when I drove all the way out there, killed a turkey. It wasn't the first morning, but it was the second morning. I killed a turkey, you know. So, anyway, we had a great trip.
You got three states this year.
Do what?
You got three states this year. You got Alabama, Kansas, and New York.
And that's unusual for
me. That's pretty good.
I mean, I've only killed a turkey, I believe, in Texas. The only other place I really killed a turkey in my life.
Well, this year, you're setting up three. Now you're working to your 49,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so now I'm thinking about it. I need to go around more places.
Okay. Well, we can work on that for sure.
I mean, we got buddies of ours that, you know, they Montana, Wyoming, Kansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Maine, you know, they go all over and kill turkeys, but it takes time and money.
Well, we'll try. We'll figure out how to do it on a budget. I'm good at that, so we'll work on next year's trips. All right, coming back here in just a couple minutes, it is, less than a week out now from Snapper Season 2026. And if we do that, we got to talk to Dr. Sean Powers, and he joins us coming up next on Midday, FM Talk Outdoors. To FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, my board, glad to have you all along, and looking forward to Friday. And just like I said, snapper season, and magically, here in the studio, Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama, Marine Sciences, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and as he knows, it irritates him when I say it, the emperor of judging at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, joining us now to talk about snapper season a whole lot more. Good to see you.
Good to be here. We've been out trying to get all of our field work done before Friday and the start of snapper season. The wind, for the most part, this spring has not cooperated.
No.
So we've had some not pleasant days, but, you know, part of what we do for the state marine resources is to get a sense of what the population is before and then after the season, or now there's no after the season in September.
Well, you can't manage what you don't measure, right?
Absolutely.
And and you've said it before, you've talked on shows in the past, but let's do a quick one. When you say you're taking an assessment, like, how do y'all do, like, just give me the elevator talk, how do you do that?
So we randomly choose, you know, usually about 100 reefs from the 10,000 or so out there, because we map the reefs as well. And then we drop a remotely operated vehicle with video on it, and we count the fish. And we can estimate the population size, both on the artificial, but we also spend time on the deeper natural water. Then we also have a longer-term survey that uses hook and line to look over time.
And this was interesting, too, on those surveys, and I've gotten lucky to go on one of these before. You fish a... He said, like, we're going to fish chicken rigs on this thing, and that's all we're going to fish, because you have to make sure it's the same each time, right? You have to.
Correct. So we fish the same way that Dr. Bob Shipp started the survey in 1995. So, and I know it drives the deckhands completely insane that can't we put more style rigs out? And we're like, no, two style rigs, eight double drop bottom.
But that's the science of it. You got to keep it the same. If you're going to compare this to this, I see even my non-scientific brain goes, okay, that makes sense. You got to do it the same way.
Because it also does allow us to look at what beeliner is doing, what lane snapper is doing, what other species are doing. It's primarily catching red snapper, but we have a whole lot of other species we can monitor that way. But really, all of that tells us what the fisherman is probably going to experience. Because those are captain's choice sites usually. The ROV and the underwater video gives us a sense of what the true population is. It's all statistically rigorous, and we can estimate the population size. And then we meet with the state and talk about those things.
You know, Mike and I have talked about this with you in the past, and y'all think about this. When you go to a spot, you're like, man, it marks up good. You're not catching fish. Y'all been there with the ROV down. You're seeing so it's a true thing that we go, man, they're just not biting. Y'all have had trips where the ROV's down, you see the snapper, and y'all aren't catching them hand over fist.
Correct. And sometimes we'll see everybody's catching nothing but small snapper, and we're like, well, there's big snapper there. And then sometimes we'll say, well, that's why nobody's catching a big snapper, because they're all small there. So, and we do public and we do private, well, non-published. I assume there was a time before the fancy electronics where a private reef was a private reef.
Yeah, there's the non-published.
State published numbers and non-published numbers. So, but it's looking good. I mean, we were out there and not too far off last week, and we were catching nice snapper, you know, 16-inch plus, fairly close to shore,
meaning
12 miles.
12 miles.
Yep. The reef zone starts right at about 10 or 12 miles. So, like every year, the further you go, the bigger the average size happens. And as you get closer to shore, particularly when the season starts to ramp up, you'll get those smaller fish. The other thing we've noticed, and we did an analysis of this for the state, is we always talk about make sure you're targeting the larger fish. Because on those double drop rigs.
Yeah, you're getting smaller fish.
Yeah, what I worry about is the discard rate. So, and it's like one keeper for every four discards if you're using that bottom rig and fishing right off the bottom. You can reduce that to less than two discards for every one fish, and really come close to 1-to-1 if you use those sow rigs and fish up in the water column.
Yeah, but you know, up and out, we've always said the bigger snapper are up and out of structure. You know, sow rig with a live bait and fluorocarbon leader, maybe not any discards, but there are days out there, like you said, that was when he told us that y'all go, there's big fish there, and they just don't bite on given days. Now, I think probably early on in the season they will, but that is a thing.
Yeah, I'm always surprised because
I always thought
smaller
any snapper
ones
would bite.
Seem to be more aggressive.
Yeah, they're hungrier
than the larger ones. I guess. I mean, usually with fish or any wildlife, the larger ones get to eat first, and then the smaller ones. But red snapper and fish in general don't seem to follow that.
Well, you put it in the trapping world, I tell you this, if you're trapping on land here, you'll catch the younger ones first, a trap before you catch the older ones.
Yeah,
they're smarter like that. So with what y'all have been seeing, you talk about the numbers of fish. Last year we talked about how many fish were out there, just the population was high. They were just under that threshold for being the 16s and all that, and you've taught me over time they grow pretty fast during the summer. Kind of your assessment of where we are, like, in these sample reefs, are we 50-50 legal, not legal? Or are we over 50% legal size fish? What are you seeing?
Well, again, it depends on you're talking about what the anglers experience. So that's what we were just talking about. It's probably, if you're fishing with sow rigs, it's about
4-to-1.
50-50. No, okay. I mean, it's like 1.4 discards for every one
Okay.
keeper.
Okay.
With the double rigs, it's more like four discards for every keeper. So as far as the
what
population,
do y'all use bait-wise? I know, but what do y'all use bait-wise?
Squid on the double drop, which is probably why we have a real good index of beeliners, because that rig is great for beeliners. And then, cut-up pogies on the sow rigs. So no live bait. No, I mean, you can definitely tune it in even more, and this is why I'm saying this drives the deckhands crazy. It's like, can't we throw a live bait?
No, the science says you can. So, but what you're seeing out there on those samples, you're seeing good numbers of 16-inch plus fish.
Right now, yeah, at the start of the season. Now, the ROV, when we dropped the video, most of that population is going to be sublegal. I mean, just because those are the future ones. And as they snapper get older and larger, they're going to migrate deeper. So most of the surveys inshore should show lots of small fish. Okay, and that's what we see. And that's what we want to see for next year and the following year. A lot of times you get a lot of discards just because it's been a banner recruitment year. You have a lot of fish coming in.
All right, get back into that when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and glad to have our friend Dr. Sean Powers in studio. Snapper season coming up, been talking snapper, and a lot of questions here before everybody launches. Of course, the question we can't answer right now, what's it going to be, you know, wave-wise out there? I know this weekend's beautiful, which worries me. You know, it's like it's the unscientific theory, like with hurricanes. People say, well, we're due. I'm like, well, that's not actually science, but it's, being offshore fishermen, you're like, man, if it was calm last weekend, can we get two weekends in a row? Let's keep our fingers crossed, I guess, to get out there. Talking about snapper season coming up, we were talking to the survey and y'all have done already. Mike was bringing up something during the break.
I mean, last year, your survey was great. You said there was more snapper out there than you've ever seen. What about this year? What does it compare to last year?
It looks remarkably the same as last year. So it hasn't gone up anymore. We saw it trending up for the last 4 or 5 years, just more and more juvenile snapper for the most part. And now it seems to have leveled. The average size in the population is ticking up just a little bit. So, and that's promising to see. We obviously don't want the average size to decrease in the population after a long period where we were decreasing after those long seasons and high harvest. So I think we're on a road, knock on wood, to continue to tick that average size up with a healthy population size, with new recruits coming into the population, and then slowly ticking up. I think that confirms that we're at about the right spot, about 600,000 pounds, where the private wrecks looks like it'll give us over time a little bit of a higher average size. But there's way enough keepers out there. You know, just, again, make sure you choose a site, alter your fishing technique when you have a lot of smaller snapper. You know, one of the things that we see over time is that, you know, as we wrap it up the harvest too much, we can see that average size decrease. It doesn't seem to affect the recruitment rate, but it does affect the average size. So I think, you know, that 600,000, 660, I think, is the quota, is about right to slowly increase that average size while balancing, giving people enough days. It's always the balance.
Sure,
we talk about that numerous times. If, you know, we can get you a large snapper, make sure one out of every two are keepers, but you're going to go back to 9 or 10 days for that. And I don't think anybody wants that.
Do you ever go to a spot and you say, man, this place is overpopulated. They can't maintain this. Do you ever go to a place and see that? Or I know you go to places and say, well, there's not that many snapper on here, but do you ever go where this place is overpopulated?
That's an interesting thing. I don't think anybody's ever asked me, is there ever too many fish, is what you're asking
me. I mean, it is in other things. I mean, you get too many deer, eat too many turkeys.
No, you don't get too many turkeys.
Well, that's true.
There's been no sign of
too many coyotes. Too many,
I can tell you that there's reefs out there that we've gone to, and it's like, how can there be 1,000 snapper on this little thing? And they are, and obviously they're out foraging in a bigger halo around that reef. And then there's other reefs that, you know, how are there only 22 snapper?
Yeah,
but we do see quite impressive snapper numbers, you know, especially if you don't have a whole lot of big snapper. It seems those small ones just can explode in that population. And then when you think about that, we have triggerfish there. We have sometimes amberjack if it's a larger reef. We'll have lionfish. It's like, how can all of those fish survive and get enough food?
Yeah,
I mean, because, you know, they can only go so far from the reef structure without worrying about a shark or something getting them. So now it's impressive the amount of capacity the system has.
Two things I want to interject. One nerd science thing here, and I won't go too long on it, but I wonder if those reefs that have those higher populations, if we saw the way currents work in the Gulf. Are they in a more fertile current line that brings more, you know, is it delivering more bait coming through the current, you know, into those reefs versus another one? You know, if you mapped how the current flows and how it moves nutrients through the Gulf, are certain reefs in a better food train, I guess, than others?
I just think it's more what's coming in from land. We're in a very productive, obviously the area we're in is called the Fertile Crescent of the Gulf of Mexico. It's called the Fertile Crescent naturally because we have a lot of nutrients flowing from the rivers. And when they hit that clear water where there's sunlight, it just makes a really productive system. And what our system near shore in Alabama was missing is the structure. And that's what the state and the public have done a great job deploying reefs.
Yeah.
If anybody asked me what they could do to help, you know, let's start deploying more reefs, particularly those private reefs, you know.
Unpublished.
Unpublished. Of those 10,000 reefs that we have out there, you know, 80% were put there by fishermen.
Right.
You know, the state, I mean, it would... They try to do their best with keeping up for loss and all that other things. But we saw that kind of, you know, at the peak where people started not to worry about snapper so much because the population looked like it was well on the recovery. We didn't see as many new structures out there. And things like chicken transport devices.
Well, we all go, let me translate for the doctor, chicken coops, y'all.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
know they
Kevin do. Anson, the Marine Resource Director, always corrects me on that. And finally, someone told me something, and I was like, wow.
They're actually the carrying
Kevin's pig. Yeah. actually correct.
Oh, he is correct.
Like, a chicken coop occurs on a farm,
yes.
and it's a little wooden house.
Yes.
A chicken transport device.
But they hauled them to market in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it didn't occur to me, and I was like, wow, Kevin's right to keep on correcting me all the time, because it is a chicken transport device. But they have a very limited lifespan, 7 to 10 years. They hold a lot of snapper. The state doesn't deploy those because of the limited lifespan. So, I mean, I would just encourage people to continue to put out reefs when they can.
You said this before. It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare. Like the hare, the speedy, the chicken transport device, faster, more fish, but shorter lifespan. Concrete pyramid structure maybe slower, but lasts longer.
Correct.
Okay.
And marine
resources.
And if you
put one out, you know, I mean, if you're not going to do it every year, it seems like concrete is, even though I caught a lot of fish off transport devices, but. The pyramid concrete things could have served you for more years.
It makes it easy for us to plan the number of structures and all that because they last longer. But, you know, marine resources has really, it's really a simple procedure. I mean, you go there, you get your permit, they make sure the materials are correct to put there. And it's great for the system, and it's great for fishermen.
Guys, got to run to a break. Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you along. And our friend, Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, the emperor of judging at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, which,
we
by the way...
We could talk to him for a week.
And we will. He's going to be so tired of us before we even get into the rodeo. He'll be, if he'll say yes, he'll be a guest on here quite regularly between now and then. And speaking of which, shout out to the rodeo guys. Got all kind of, you know, you'll be hearing them on the show here soon. Everything getting ramped up for this year. Sean, you mentioned a couple things got my attention. You mentioned beeliners for a second. Okay. And I have an obsession there. Y'all were seeing better and bigger beeliners because y'all are fishing the same transects. That's what I think is interesting. Fishing the same spots, the science of it. Beeliners were good for y'all.
Yeah, and everything we've heard from fishermen, vermilion snapper, as we like to refer to
it. We're translating here,
yeah, no, and what I've been impressed with was just the size of the vermilion. I mean, seems to be increasing. I mean, they've always been there. I mean, there's a couple of years where you can't, that doesn't seem that many vermilion, and a little bit of it is, maybe we didn't select the right site. Mm-hmm. You know, they like low relief barges, and now we're finding them on concrete pyramids. And we've always been able to find the really big ones offshore, way offshore.
Yeah.
But now, no, it's just really striking that the both what we call the abundance, the catch per unit effort, is higher for beeliners as well as the average size. Which is interesting because you would think a lot of the effort has shifted to beeliners because it's open year-round.
Yeah, I mean, that's like when you take, we all know this, but I mean, you're in the science world, but the human part of it is you slow, you know, by regulation effort over here, the effort doesn't all just disappear. It goes somewhere else. People got a boat, they want to go do something and catch something. You move effort to different species, but these beeliners are doing good. What? Growth-wise, because I wanted to get to this before we wrapped up, and this is just, you know, Dr. Powers told me this last year before, and it's really been proven true. I was complaining to him. I said, I got some spots, and every darn one of the fish I'm catching is 15, but there's piles of them. You said, go back there at the end of season. Sure enough, they'd grown, you know, to legal fish. How fast do beeliners grow? Do we know? Is it like, are they fast like a red snapper?
They're faster. They're
faster.
Yep. They're more of a weed in our system.
Okay.
That they grow fast. They don't live that long. But
not like a dog, like mahi. Are they that kind of fast?
Not that kind of fast. They're a reef dependent fish, so they're not that. I mean, maybe, you know, you'll get 8-9 years out of some of them. It won't be 50 that you get
like
out
red
of
snapper.
Yeah, red snapper, I've always thought, red snapper is just a strange species. It's almost like God made it for us to harvest.
Yeah.
Because a fish that lives that long should delay its reproduction.
Yeah, but they get...
And they don't. They start reproducing at 3, 4, 5 years. And, and they should have fewer batches. And no, they're very fecund. They live a long time.
They're perfect. They're pretty much perfect for an angler.
I mean, they're not the only reef fish that does that, but it's always interesting because most of the time we talk about, you know, sharks on one extreme, high parental investment.
Takes them a long time to start
breeding. Long time. And then, you know, things
like mahi, like a dolphin.
Yeah, on
they
one
come out of the egg sac and they're already reproducing.
On a continuum. Obviously, the larger and older the fish, the more eggs they're going to produce. So, no, but beeliner is, seems remarkably resilient for a lot of effort. And the feds concur with that, with the assessments and everything like that.
All right, just a few minutes left. We got to talk about amberjack. What's going on with that?
So my understanding is that amberjack won't be open until September, or they will look at it in September. You know, there's some push for just like we did with red snapper, more state management of all the reef fish.
Which, by the way, y'all, you've put that in on your app. So that's, I mean, this is getting the data to be able to do it, y'all. So
absolutely. Yeah. You want to report those. We want a good sense of landings there. Yeah, we have an amberjack study that's almost there. It's about a 1 or 2 weeks away from the press release on our estimate.
That's when we're getting them back.
I hope so.
For the Gulf of Mexico.
Because those government people don't fish. Because if they fish, they'd go out there, and amberjack are almost as nuisance as sharks. I mean, you can't hardly catch a snapper a lot of times for the amberjack. So,
but
the,
you know what's
interesting? I'll let you know in 2 weeks.
Yeah, what's interesting, though, is like in the places I fish, Mike, you know, you don't check up. Like the furthest place I go, you know, if I go 40 miles offshore, catch a snapper, that's where Mike stops to catch bait. So they are different. They are different. You know, I'm a lot closer in. You know, I'm 40 miles and in. Mike's not even checking up at that. So maybe there's more amberjack out there. I mean, I see them, but I don't want, they're not everywhere on the stuff I fish.
Definitely more amberjack offshore than it is inshore. Always has been. Unless you tell me different.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So I think that it's going to be a good season for snapper. I mean, I think, you know, the 7 day a week makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, particularly with, you know, now that the fishermen have gotten away from this derby style mentality,
which is great,
of the 9-11 day seasons that we had. You know, everybody should be careful. Look, there's lots of snapper out there. There's lots of time. You know, be safe. Watch the gas prices, though. Yeah. I mean,
that's what's going to hurt people from going snapper fishing this year. You know, it's always the kids and the grandkids and stuff playing ball and doing all the stuff they do during the summer vacations and stuff. But it's going to be the gas prices. I know it's going to affect me. So as much as I love to go, it's going to affect me. I mean, there's no doubt.
I mean, I'm no economist, but I like to pretend with my economics friends I am. I mean, I would think it's not going to affect your first trip or second trip because you're just excited.
Yep.
It's time.
Yeah. You're right.
Do you think it's, I mean, later on?
Yeah, and it also will affect maybe what you target, how far out you go, you know? I think you first
how far out you go.
Yeah.
Well, more further you go, you're going to spend gas money.
You may even start a little schedule. I've done it before, too. Instead of going out there and just start bouncing from number to number, you go, okay, if we go out here, we can hit these numbers. And if we turn, we're going to come back in around the west side of Dolphin Island and we hit these. I'm making a circuit. And then you go, oh, let's go that one another, you know, 11 miles down the hill. You're like, nope. Or, you know. So I think it might be some of that. Man, I can't wait to talk about this amberjack study coming up and a lot more this summer. Dr. Sean Powers, thanks for being on with us.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Sean.
And right on the safety thing, too, before I wrap up, you know, it's Boating Safety Week, but Mike and I have preached about it a long time. We got shows. I may even put one up on the podcast page. Y'all can go back and listen to. You put gas in. You got bait. You got ice. Go get a PLB. Get a personal locator beacon, EPIRB. Have that on your boat. It's money absolutely well spent. There's no excuse not to have it. If you have the money to go offshore fishing, you have the money to have that safety equipment, please get it. All right. We'll do the show again next week. Y'all have a great weekend.